The Fan on Demand. He says the things you wish you were brave enough to say and smart enough to think of. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour number three of Primetime Sports for this Wednesday, the 23rd of April. We are coast to coast on the Sportsnet radio and television networks. It's Canada's most listened to sports talk show. It's Primetime. I'm Bob McCowan. That's the coach, Butch Carter. A little bit later on, Jared Bell will join us. We'll talk a little bit about the National Football League draft upcoming and the most intriguing names in that draft and the recent developments. But an extraordinary story to begin with. Butch, when we think of it's not uncommon for Cuban-based athletes to land on the shores of America and usually and wind up getting jobs in professional sports, specifically baseball players. But when we envision those stories, we almost invariably envision some kind of fishing boat that leaves in the middle of the night from the shores of Cuba and goes the 90 miles, makes its way to the beaches of Florida. Where U.S. officials, immigration officials, essentially welcome them.
Correct.
The truth is that if you get stopped before you get there, the obligation is to send them back.
Correct.
Yusiel Puig's journey started that way, but certainly didn't end that way. He didn't get to America the way so many other refugees from Cuba did. And his journey was both circuitous, fascinating, frightening, and not as uncommon, I think, as we would imagine. Jesse Katz of LA Magazine joins us. He wrote a piece documenting this journey for LA Magazine. Jesse, good of you to take time for us. How are you?
Hey, Bob. It is great to be with you. You're right. That fishing boat probably ain't going to make it.
But you would acknowledge that is the vision that we all have, right, of a bunch of people in a rowboat. I mean, it may not be real, but it is that vision. This is how Cubans get to Florida, right?
Yeah, we hear the term Cuban defector, and we know that it involves some leap somewhere, right? I mean, yes, a boat taking you to the shores of Florida, or even, presenting yourself in an embassy somewhere, right, and being whisked away. But the reality is what it does is it plunges you into this black market for baseball players and, puts you in the hands of really an organized criminal pipeline. Because there's two things going on. One is the immigration policy, and the other is Major League Baseball's rules, collective bargaining agreement. And so on the immigration end, a Cuban actually has some benefits under our wet foot, dry foot policy that says if you make it, you're home free. You will be welcomed as a refugee. But we don't want to know how you got there, and we're going to try to stop you if you get on that fishing boat. So as a starting point, we have a policy that is already pushing all Cubans, not just talented baseball players, but into the hands of more sophisticated smugglers who know how to get around the Coast Guard, who know how to avoid detection so that they can take advantage of that policy.
And in the case of Puig, and I want you to tell most of the story, if you will. It's only fitting. But in the case of Puig, it begins with a high-speed powerboat ride from the shores of Cuba, but not to Florida, but to Mexico. Pick up the story there, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, he's going hundreds of miles out of his way. And the reason is, if he landed in Florida, And of course, that would solve the immigration problem, but it wouldn't solve the baseball problem. Under the baseball problem, he would be treated as an amateur, and he would be put into the draft, and he'd be chosen, you know, like any other kid out of college, and he'd have no bargaining power. He'd have to do a deal with the one team that drafted him. So in order to take advantage of baseball's rules and declare himself a free agent, he needs to go to a third country and establish legal residency there. So, I mean, there's obviously a fiction taking place. Nobody really believes that Yasiel Puig intended to, you know, put down roots in Mexico.
Right.
It's just a device for him to stop being a Cuban, because remember, U.S. government, you guys are lucky up there. You guys can do whatever. You guys can go to Cuba whenever you want. But and in fact, on my last trip to Cuba, I used a Toronto travel agency because that was the easiest way to connect the dots. But a U.S. company can't do business with a Cuban. That's called trading with the enemy.
Right.
So in some ways, Yasiel had to become, you know, quote unquote, a Mexican for a little while in order to be open for business and then be able to negotiate with all the different teams that might be interested in him. And that difference is worth many, many millions of dollars.
So he gets to Mexico, but he's not just walking around a free man, you know, twiddling his thumbs, biding his time, waiting until he gets citizenship or documented landed status so that he can wander across the border. He's essentially a prisoner.
Yeah, I mean, he could have been walking free, twiddling his thumbs, if the guys that set this in motion had paid the money.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one of the most preposterous elements of this story is the guy who bankrolled this expedition, or said he was going to do that, who brought one of the most talented athletes on the planet to the United States and play for the Dodgers, is a guy in his 20s. In Miami, who's an air conditioning repairman, who was on probation at the time for attempting to steal an air conditioning unit. So this is like our Mr. Big, who's putting this all in motion. And, you know, he almost gets Yasiel Puig killed, quite frankly, because the smugglers do the dirty work. They get Puig out of Cuba. They bring him to Mexico. He's in this dumpy motel on Isla Mujeres off the coast of Cancun. And the AC guy had pledged $250,000 for this job. And then suddenly he doesn't have the money. He can't pay it. So these smugglers, you know, they're bad dudes, but they're also businessmen. And they expected to be paid. And, you know, over the course of 20-some-odd days in the summer of 2012, suddenly Yasiel Puig is a captive. He's being held almost hostage in this motel as the smugglers are arguing over the price for his freedom.
So this guy, the air conditioning repairman's name is Raul Pacheco. And he agreed to do this deal in exchange for $250,000. And then his part of the deal, I gather, was that Puig would then give him 20% of his baseball income for the rest of his life. Is that the transaction?
That is the allegation that is in court records in a federal courthouse in Miami. I think it's not unusual to Puig. It's definitely come up in other cases involving other Cuban defectors. It sounds very plausible. So, you know, Raul Pacheco is both helping feed Major League Baseball's appetite for talent. It's helping advance Yasiel Puig's career. But he's also exploiting him and taking what any of us would consider to be just a usurious cut of his income.
Is there any indication that Pacheco had the $250,000 or had the ability to raise that $250,000?
You know, that's a really good question. I don't know the answer for sure. My gut is telling me that he didn't have $250,000. I'd say most people don't have that under their mattress anyway, let alone a guy whose job is either repairing or stealing air conditioning units. You know, my gut is telling me that he gambled and he figured, well, let's just get him out of Cuba. We get him out of Cuba, we bring him to Mexico, and then we'll figure something out. You know, we'll get the smugglers to release him long enough to audition for scouts, and he'll sign the contract, and he'll pay off the smugglers right there on the spot. You know, like, we can work this out. But, you know, he's dealing with some bad dudes who are the smugglers, And the smugglers are mostly Cuban American. They're essentially trafficking in their own people. But keep in mind that the smugglers, they got a deal with an even higher authority, and this is the Zeta drug cartel, which is, you know, has inflicted all sorts of horrors on the people of Mexico. And these smugglers, they have to pay a tax to the Zetas. They have to pay what they call a rite of passage in order to do business in that part of the world, across the Caribbean and the Yucatan Peninsula. So, you know, they have their own worries. This is like not a debt that they can afford to pardon, because, again, they're answering to this even more nefarious organization.
Has it been disclosed, this is Butch Carter, has it been disclosed if the trafficker was dealing arm's length or non-arm's length with an agent?
You know, we don't really have those details, at least in terms of how Puig's situation ultimately worked out. What I did discover, though, this was, you know, just sort of an amazing thing I stumbled into during my reporting, was when the smugglers, they began to get, I think, worried that they weren't going to get anything out of the air conditioning guy. Like, they needed to figure some way out to get some value out of Puig. And so while they're holding him in Mexico, they start calling around to agents. And I have this in my story. They call one agent here in L.A. Hey, we got Yasiel Puig. You want to represent him? It'll cost you $175,000. They call another agent. Guy happened to be in upstate New York at that time. Hey, we have Yasiel Puig. It's going to be $250,000. They call back again, $500,000. They were essentially auctioning him off to agents. Now, the two people I talked to did not, first of all, didn't have that kind of cash sitting under their mattress. Secondly, didn't want to engage in something that they knew was illegal. And third, also, you know, unenforceable. You could pay all this money. Oh, now I have Yasiel as a client.
Yeah, maybe. But
what's to keep Yasiel from then jumping ship to another agent? But the fact that the smugglers were doing this, that they had these agents' phone numbers, that they were calling around thinking somebody would take the bait, tells you, I think, that this has happened before and that somewhere along the line, agents have definitely paid for Cuban players.
Yeah, because the way I'm reading the story is that Puig's situation was so desperate that he said, I'll take the chance. His money guy couldn't show up with the money. And as they threatened Puig, I guarantee you he told them how good he was. And that's why the price went up. I'd be willing to bet if you're scared up for your life, you're telling them you're Superman. And
I'm worth a lot more to you alive than dead.
There's no, and what the Dodgers eventually paid for him, there's no question that he was.
I think that's a really good point. I think, you know, and the price went up both to the agents and also the smugglers who were holding him started imposing, you know, a tax on the air conditioning guy. You know, okay, we're going to up it 15, 20 grand a day as long as you're not paying, because we realize, you know, how valuable this guy is. And supposedly the price got up over $400,000 for him. And you're right. If you're Yasiel and you want to survive that, you gotta convince these guys that you're worth saving.
Well, he's a talker.
I guarantee you those smugglers weren't baseball fans.
Yeah, I guarantee you he's a talker, and he was talking because he wants to play baseball. He knows he's 1 mile from home.
Well, but he also wants to get out of there with all his hands and fingers and toes.
Right.
And I mean, these are nasty dudes. That have got him in this motel and probably are telling him, if your guy in Miami doesn't pay, if the air conditioning business isn't too good, you're going to be losing some tentacles here. And I mean, I don't care how many stones you got. And this kid obviously has a lot to do what he did to get out of Cuba.
There's no question.
He's still got to be scared.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think that has still got to be in the back of his mind, because he is playing in Los Angeles and the cartel can just write up the 405 if they need to see him. Because he hasn't paid the air conditioning guy yet, has he?
There's too much traffic on the 405 for them to just ride on. Keep that in mind. You know, supposedly, Everyone has finally been kind of greased along the way. My sources are telling me that Yasiel and his people did pay off the smugglers eventually, but they followed him up here, and they did threaten his life. Now, this is a couple of years ago, but he paid them off. One of them ended up dead, the smuggler, in fact, the guy who took him out of Cuba, was found 4 months later. He was executed, bullet-riddled body on a street in Cancun. So that's some pretty heinous stuff.
Yike.
The air conditioning guy, by the way, according to court records, Puig has paid those guys back $1.3 million so far of his earnings. But keep in mind, he's in a seven-year contract.
Right.
I think in year three now. And so, one of the troubling details in all of this is if he does, in fact, owe them that 20% forever, every time the Dodgers write him a check, for his, phenomenal contributions to our baseball club, is he then having to break off a piece of that and continue to give money to some unsavory characters in Miami who have, entered the human smuggling business?
So I guess where we get to with this, Jesse, the end game for me on this story is, as fascinating as this is, we are sympathetic with Puig and his desire, need to get out of Cuba. That he, he tried other ways. This seemed to him to be the only way to get out. And it's really hard to be critical of a young man who makes these choices, as dangerous as they turned out to be. But these economic choices, he winds up in Los Angeles. He's paid off a crap load of money to a bunch of scumbag drug smugglers and human smugglers and, the creep in Miami. But this isn't how it's supposed to work. You can't just sit back and say, oh, well, that's, he only had to do it. That's okay. There's something broken in the system that doesn't protect a Yasiel Puig, doesn't go after these people, that continues to say, if you make it on the cigar boat to the shores of Florida, you're okay. But if you don't, we're going to send you back. Like, all of this is wrong, isn't it?
Well, sure. But, you're describing, it's not just a baseball thing. It's
a life thing.
This is a dysfunctional relationship between two neighboring countries, the U.S. and Cuba, that has gone on now for decades and decades and has survived, seven U.S. presidents. We're still stuck in an Eisenhower-era relationship with Cuba, and we got stubborn governments on both sides. Cuba has an oppressive regime there that makes life very difficult for and desperate for people who live there. But our own government here in the U.S., we have this antiquated idea that, giving anything, having anything to do with Cuba is somehow, empowering your enemy. And in 2014, I think for most people, we're kind of, we sort of know that, what you were saying in the beginning, we know they have to defect. We forget what that means. And so these collisions of grand forces, geopolitical forces, ideological and economic forces, those are abstract. When it trickles down to the street level, you see the toll that it takes. It puts young kids like Yasiel Puig in impossible situations, and they end up taking enormous risks and making some really uncomfortable compromises.
Do you see the Los Angeles Dodgers as being in any way complicit with this whole unsavory business because they chose to sign Puig?
I mean, look, there's one way of you can look at it from the perspective that the Dodgers' ability to sign him to a $42 million contract is what greases the wheels of this entire, journey, right? All these people along the way are getting an advance on that check that hasn't even been written yet. They're all jockeying for a cut of it before Puig even signs the contract. Although if you want to look at it that way, you can look at it from the point of view of, a Dodger fan, somebody like me who goes to opening day every year, 16 years in a row, I'm at Dodger Stadium for the home opener. My money that I'm spending on that ticket, which is going into the Dodgers coffers, is then in turn going to Puig, which is in turn going to the smugglers. So,
yeah.
You know, if you want to open that door, then, you know, we're all complicit in some ways.
And we should make note, too, and I think you guys will both attest to this fact, the Puig signing was decried by many other general managers of Major League Baseball teams, you know, with the, well, I wouldn't have done that. You know, there's something ethically and inherently wrong with what the Dodgers did. We, our organization, certainly wouldn't have gone down that path, which, of course, as we know, is all a bunch of BS because the Dodgers probably paid more than they would pay for the kid. So, I mean, there's an inequity there as well.
Yeah, I mean, the Dodgers were, they had a couple missions when they went down there to sign him. You know, part of it was just reestablishing their reputation and in a part of the country that they had helped pioneer many years ago. But, you know, the previous owners here, Frank and Jamie McCourt, had kind of looted the organization and treated it like their personal ATM. And suddenly the Dodgers didn't have money to spend on prospects like that. And so we were trying to rebuild our farm system, rebuild our reputation here in L.A. And if they were going to overpay somewhat, well, that was a small price for the other message that they needed to send to the world. But look, I mean, every team who has gone through this, you know, has to answer or ask themselves the same questions. You know, the White Sox signed Abreu to a $68 million contract
right.
Recently. You know, Oakland has Cespedes. You know, each one of these guys has their own, you know, defection story, which they're, you know, reluctant to tell because of these details. What sets Puig apart is that it's really the air conditioning guy. You know, he didn't pay. And so that led to this drama, and it led to a level of danger and not just kind of a dirty business deal that that I think has really opened people's eyes to how badly this can go.
It's a spectacularly interesting story. I hope we've been able to convey it properly and do it justice. We encourage everybody to check it out. And Jesse, thank you very much for taking a few minutes for us tonight. We enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, it's a great pleasure. I'm glad you're interested up there.
Thank you. Jesse Katz of LA Magazine. Look for the article. I'm sure you can find it online through LA Magazine. Scary stuff, man.
It's all good stuff. Because basically he felt whatever was going on was so bad that he had to take the risk.
I just don't know, Butch, whether he could even, as a young kid, I don't know if he could envision what he was getting into. I think he thought he was going to get on a boat, land in Mexico, have a couple of pina coladas, somebody's going to put him in a limousine, drive him across the border, and he's going to be a Los Angeles Dodger. I don't think he thought much more than that.
I don't think that anyone who decides to leave Cuba thinks it's going to be easy.
Well, 'cause he tried previously, right?
Right.
So
right.
I know he knew what the dangers were. Clearly he was desperate because he did a deal with the devil.
Right.
Who happened to be an air conditioning guy.
Let's go back to The Godfather when Michael was in Cuba and he watched a guy take a grenade in the stomach instead of being arrested.
Look, I understand it ain't good. You know, and if you're a young baseball player with the kind of talent that Puig has, and you're making $17 a week or $17 a month. I don't remember what it was. And you're reading the newspaper or watch. I don't know. I guess I can watch on television and you're seeing guys make tens, hundreds of millions of dollars. And you know you're as good as them. And that dream is 90 miles away, but you can't get there. You'll do anything you can. I still say, you know, did he sit there and say, well, I'm probably going to have to sit in a motel for a bunch of weeks and have guys with wave machetes in front of me and threaten to cut my fingers and toes off before I'm going to get to America? I'm not thinking he thought that.
Well, I agree with you because they don't have cable.
All right. The NFL draft is just around the corner. Actually, the NFL draft probably should have happened by now if it was in years past. This is the latest. I think this is the latest ever. This is our friend Jarrett Bell joining us. Just the latest ever, Jarrett?
Something funny about that guy?
What up?
Well, you know, the NFL has had the draft at Radio City Music Hall for however many years, right?
Yeah.
And somehow there was a scheduling conflict, and the facility cut a deal to have a show at the time, and obviously dollars talk at the time that normally the NFL had this draft, so the NFL said, okay, we'll move it back a couple weeks. All right, no big deal. Well, what's happened in the meantime is that that show, and I don't know what it is, I'd have to go back and find out what the exact show was, but the way it was told to me is whatever show that they moved the draft for has since been canceled. So there was never a show.
Go figure.
The NFL moved this draft anyway. So, so that gives us 2 extra weeks to talk about stuff like that and who's rising, who's falling, who's going to trade, who's going to move up to get Johnny Manziel and all that other kind of stuff.
Well, you know, for guys like us that are, you know, interested in, and in what's going to happen and involved, and we talk about it on a regular basis, but it isn't our entire lives, I don't see the big deal. It's more of a focus for you. Is there anything good about this? Is it arguably a better idea to hold the draft in the first week of May rather than in April?
I don't think it makes much of a difference to me, you know, even as a guy who, you know, covers this thing, you know, with a lot of intensity. just because if you didn't have this, there would still be things on the calendar. You know, you got your rookie mini camps, you got so many different things now on the NFL calendar that get attention now that, you know, would in previous years would not get attention. So the NFL has kind of gone at this 365-day deal. And not only just because the league wants to promote itself year-round, but because the interest is there from the consumers and the fans. I mean, it's one thing to say we're going to have football on the calendar 12 months a year, but if nobody really cares, then it wouldn't matter. I mean, you can have WNBA 12 months a year, and I don't know if it'll have the same interest as the NFL. I'm not picking on the WNBA, it could be soccer, hockey, whatever. But the point being, the NFL just commands that kind of attention. But here's one final thought about the draft and what I think they should do is, and they talked about it, move the draft around. Make it a bit more special. I get the whole idea of coming to New York. It's, that's where league headquarters is. It is the Big Apple. And for the kids coming to the draft, you know, it's a special thing. But I say move it around to generate more interest in different places. So one year have it in San Francisco, another year have it in Dallas, another
right.
year have it in Chicago. And, I mean, the draft is basically a teleconference. You know, from a logistical standpoint of what the teams have to do because they're back at their headquarters with their own draft boards making those decisions and just calling them in the NFL Central. So that would be an easy event to move and stage compared to some other things.
Well, the National Hockey League has done it for years, right? So it's the format of a draft, you know, regardless of whether the general managers are on the floor of an arena or whether they're back in their offices – fundamentally doesn't matter. It's, you know, the commissioner getting up and behind a podium and announcing a name, and you got a bunch of half-drunk fans up in the stands going woo-hoo or boo-boo. So, yeah. I mean, that's what a draft is, right?
Case, it's like, okay, I get to sleep in my own bed.
I'll go to the
Ritzy Hotel downtown.
Yeah, you know, running these things ain't nuclear science is all I can say. I'm with you. Let me move it around and make it more of a fan event. I mean, the National Football League is not adverse to that. They've been doing that kind of stuff for years. That's why they don't do it with the draft is kind of a puzzlement. So let's get to the nuts and bolts here. There's a whole lot of, you know, this is not uncommon. Every once in a while you get a guy who's a consensus number one, and the team who's got the number one pick always says, well, we don't know. But we do know. Everybody knows who they're going to take. This is one of those years where I gather, I know, we're not sure. Who does Houston take? Does Houston even keep the number one pick? What do you bet?
Yeah, good question. Maybe not, but if you were to go back and, like, check all the newspaper clips or TV clips or whatever. Yeah, you'd see four, five, six different guys being named as the possible number one, including Manziel and Blake Bortles and Jadeveon Clowney.
Clowney, yeah.
Is the guy who they're going to end up taking, but I wouldn't bet money on that because I don't like to lose money. And then you mentioned the whole possibility of perhaps trading. I think that's something that could happen, and they could take Khalil Mack if they move down a couple spots. What scouts tell you is that Khalil Mack is actually a better fit for the Texans defense, but I don't know if I buy that a whole lot because if you've got a special talent, and I'm not saying that Jadeveon Clowney is going to be the next Lawrence Taylor, as Carl Banks so eloquently said, hey, wait a minute before you start talking that. But let's just say he's a, you know, a one-of-a-kind athlete or, you know, close to a one-of-a-kind athlete. He's a big-time stud. You just build the defense around him. And you use a lot of these sub-packages anyway in terms of trying to combat offenses that use passing offenses. So you've got all these nickel and dime packages on the field anyway. So he'd have his hand on the ground and could rush the passer. So I don't think that should be a big deal in terms of whether or not they take him. It shouldn't be about that. So we'll see. All that to say, who knows? I think they'd entertain the pick, trading it, obviously, but that's going to depend on what someone would give up. And then in this draft, I think it's going to be tough to really make a real blockbuster trade because it's supposed to be a deep draft, right? Now, obviously, some teams are going to want one position or another, and that's going to influence some movement. But in terms of, okay, you've got to do an RG3 type of trade to give up a bunch of picks to move up to get somebody, it's supposed to be a deep draft, and if it's as deep as everybody's saying, then you'd probably be better off just kind of, you know, getting one of those deep picks.
Sit where you sit.
But aren't there two questions on the as far as the top pick? First of all, the coaching staff is clearly a Belichick, out of the Belichick tree.
Oh, yeah.
And traditionally, the Belichick tree would probably trade down for multiple picks for good people. The other question is, Clowney, is he a clown? We know he is an outstanding athlete, but
that's the clown, the classic clown question.
Yeah.
Okay, but
I've not seen one alpha male interview with him, and so have they.
That worries you?
I worry about where's he at on the Wunderlich? Because regardless how great of an athlete is, all those schemes and packages, he's got to remember them. Because he's got to know.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, there have been a lot of guys with sevens on the Wunderlichs and all that stuff. I don't buy a lot into that. I really don't. And I've thought about it. I think, you know, you want your quarterback to be a sharp guy, and he's the guy who really has to know it. But sometimes it's let's not. I mean, we're talking football, okay? We're not talking NASA. Right? We're talking football. So we're talking about go chase the ball. Go get the quarterback. Catch the ball. Okay, really, block this guy. I mean, they make it sound serious. And I kind of roll my eyes and chuckle sometimes. It's like, you know, when you talk to some of these athletes, and I'm not saying that there's not some sharp guys that play football. Well, we know there are, right, in all walks of life. But sometimes they make it sound like, oh, yeah, this is way above what you reporters could actually comprehend. It's like, wait a minute. You guys are the guys who were trying to cheat off of me and get my term paper, right?
Okay? Well, here's the answer to that question. How many guys from MIT are expected to be drafted in the first round this year?
I think we got a zero on that.
So I think that tells you everything you need to. And besides, Butch, the guy's a defensive end.
I understand that, but
you know, he ain't a quarterback.
But Houston needs a quarterback.
Well, they could use that too.
Yeah, but you can get that quarterback in the second round. Don't overpay for a quarterback. Yes, you do need a quarterback. No question. But you don't want to overpay for that quarterback. And I mean, that's what the Texans will tell you, that they're going to try to be true to their board. And I think if you had Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin III as your choices with Jadeveon Clowney, I think you're okay. Who do you like better, Luck or RG3, right? because you need a quarterback.
Right.
But this year, do you want to take Blake Bortles, who came out of high school as a tight end, and you know, he only had a couple years of playing, and there's a lot of development that needs to happen. And I'm not saying he may not turn out to be the next Ben Roethlisberger, as they like to compare him with, but he may also turn out to be the next Akili Smith, okay? It's like a 50-50 hit-miss ratio on first-round quarterbacks, and, you know, that's just the way it is. And you, but you can find a Drew Brees in the second round, you know? I mean, there's Andy Dalton in the second round. I'm not saying Andy Dalton's Peyton Manning, but, okay, he's a serviceable quarterback. So I think that's the thing that the Texans have to really weigh here, and that's the reason why I don't think they would take a quarterback. If they do take one, maybe it's Johnny Manziel. But, boy, this is going to be real interesting to see how it really shakes down for them, because I think they'll get that quarterback in the second round. They've got the first pick of the second round, which is like the last pick of the first round. So,
well, here's another scenario. Cleveland falls in love with Manziel, and he only recently, right? Because they bided their time before they took a look at him seriously and talked about him. And they have the 26th pick in the draft. Right. And, you know, the Browns would screw up a one-car parade, right?
Every time.
Yeah.
So, I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. So, well, you got two Buckeyes sitting here. Yeah, we know. We have a long and storied history of watching them screw things up. So here's
it's
what
the
they do.
Third time they've had two number one picks, right?
Oh yeah.
In recent years, and they took a quarterback. Or I think what Brandon Weeden one time.
Yeah, but wait, they took Quinn and Weeden, both at number 22.
Like, what were you thinking about?
Well, okay, but so the suggestion that Browns take a quarterback at 26. Well, they ran that play a couple of times and it didn't work. Now it's possible they're running
but
a third time.
It was the GM that did it. It wasn't this guy. So this guy's got to get his chance to mess it up.
Or the general manager of the week in Cleveland. Yeah. So
it may be owner of the week too.
So here's what the Cleveland does. Cleveland says, okay, we can't screw around here. Because if we want to take a quarterback at four, they're probably first three guys taken will probably be quarterbacks just to spite us. So we'll trade the 4 pick and the 26 pick to Houston in order to take Manziel number one.
Ooh, I'd take that deal if I'm Houston.
Well, I would too. Which doesn't mean it's necessarily a bad deal for Cleveland, but probably
is.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. That would be a horrible deal for them.
Well, but
because now you're talking 50-50 on Manziel. But okay, you know.
I'm just saying, pal.
Yeah,
been there, done that, got that T-shirt.
I like the action. I do.
I just don't know how Johnny Manziel survives without a brilliant offensive line.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just you got a little guy and you got big guys, and if the big guys are allowed to hit on the little guy enough, they will win.
Would you take Bridgewater?
No.
See, Bridgewater, in most people's minds, has fallen off the map, right?
Didn't like him at Louisville. Thought it was a promo. Louisville plays down a level. You know, they don't play in, you know, what I call one of the real conferences. He was very effective at where he was at, and that happens. But, no.
Yeah, I've heard that too, and I don't know what to make of it personally, because I don't watch a lot of college football, but from talking to people, I've also heard something similar to that, Butch, that, you know, maybe he was overrated when everybody was saying he was the best quarterback in the draft. So he'll have a chance to prove himself, but I don't think he's a decent talent just from what I've seen. But just like with Manziel, you wonder if he can really take the punishment.
Well, if you hate Bridgewater because he didn't play against quality opposition, then you'll really hate Blake Bortles out of Central Florida, who's the number 3 rated quarterback in this draft.
I have to like him because my son graduated and played football there at Central Florida, so he told me to leave him alone.
Oh, so now we know that has nothing to do with reality.
At least I told you.
Now you're a fan. Now you're becoming a fan instead of an intellectual observer of the draft.
He said, hey, football's grown from nothing that we may get a guy drafted in the top 10.
God. What a mess.
Yeah. I mean, he's a guy who should have stayed in school to develop even more, but I don't blame him for coming out because if
it's money,
Trudeau,
man,
like you said, in the top 10 or top 5, you gotta go.
Somebody told you,
On one hand, I think he should have stayed in school just to develop his skills a little bit more. But on the other hand, if they're saying that you can get drafted at this spot, boy, that's a temptation. It's not like he's gonna be, a fifth round pick.
What's another year of playing the Sisters of the Poor mean for you? Anyway,
hold on, it's not that. George O'Leary is a very nice man. Except when he's coaching football.
better get out of town when you can, huh?
George O'Leary keeps a very sharp pair of cowboy boots and keeps kicking.
You're a bad guy.
Hey, Butch, I got a friend of mine who was asking me about you not too long ago. Martin McNeil.
Yes.
Former NBA writer. So I just want you to know your name did come up recently. And he asked me, and I've never met you personally, face to face. And he asked me, "Hey, you know what, Butch? I don't know."
So now you know. We're holding them hostage here in Canada.
Bob has been nice enough to let me to try to resuscitate my life. So I am here. I've stayed quietly up here, but between Bob and Chris yelling at me about getting back into it, so
You never know.
Oh, that's all good, man. That's
Jared, We got to get out of here. We're late. Thanks, pal, as always. We enjoyed talking to you.
All right, man. Have a good one, sir. Okay.
Talk to you soon. Jared Bell from USA Today. 20 minutes before the hour. Central Florida, really?
Yeah, great. I never had a problem out of him. It's the second,
Where's UCF? Is it Orlando?
Orlando. Second largest campus.
So you have to ask where it is. Yeah, Orlando?
That's where it's at. The only problem I had was the one night the guards called me to tell me that Blake had more than two people on the guest list going in the house.
They called you for that?
Yeah, it was more than two, Bob.
Back in a minute. Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The fan club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We got about 2 minutes here. That's about all we got here. There's a whole bunch of places we can go, but there's one topic we haven't addressed the entire day that I think we should probably at least put our two cents in. And I don't know how you feel about this, but everybody's, very happy. Basketball fans, Raptors win last night. Great performance by their best player. Even the series. It's all good. Friday they go into Brooklyn. At the end of the game, they drop confetti. And I'm sitting there going, really? You won one game in the postseason and you're confettiing the court? Butch, was it Bush League? What's the message they're trying to send?
Well, I think that it always ends up being that the marketing people want to make their mark. And it interferes with the basketball because it's real simple. It's something that I first explained to my younger brothers when they wanted to go to practice with me at Indiana and were worried about Coach Knight. And I said, look, it'd be real simple. Act like you belong. And if you act like you belong, and it's been consistent message that I've sent nieces, nephews, and my boys. And
you don't drop confetti after winning one game.
Yeah.
All you're saying is,
act like you belong, man.
Yeah. Well, I was just say act like you've been there before.
Yeah. I mean, it's I don't think anyone else in the league would do it.
Nope. It was unfortunate, and hopefully we don't get to have to see it again.
Well, the thing at the end of the day is that if we're saying we are the North, that means we're better than people.
You know, not at the end of last night's game. Listener, thanks to Jarrett Bell and Jesse Katz for joining us tonight. For Butch, Bob, see you tomorrow. Good night from Toronto.